And people were like, is this guy nuts? A Northwoods bar in the middle of the city, like taxidermy in Shorewood? Like, what is he thinking? It was very discouraging at the beginning, but I feel like once people came in, just that nostalgia of memories and up north and family, I think that just took over.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat, and in the case of this episode, drink. I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com, and I am joined, as always, by Lori Frederick, dining editor at onmilwaukee.com. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm great.
Y'all rested up. Today is our first post-Summerfest Monday.
Yes. So how are you feeling? We are recording a little ahead of time, but I am feeling okay. I mean, I was up until...
I mean, you only reviewed one show.
I did, but it was the last day. So my recovery has been more recent.
You should read the review. It's a very good review for Death Cab for Cutie, I think also isn't exactly an intensely straining one on the dancing muscles or...
No.
Not like I was an up EDM until 4 show in the morning, or something.
You know, writing because I can't write fast, but there's that. I'm good. It's another Monday.
Yeah. Going to ask you the most important question that's on the tip of Milwaukee's tongues right now, Lori. 3 weekends or the 11-day marathon? What is your preference?
I was a big fan of the 11-day marathon. Like, I just sort of felt like people could take off of work and just go, you know, go a few days in a row. But that's just me. I feel like it gets really drawn out. I get sick of Summerfest before Summerfest is over.
It's interesting this year. I feel like selfishly I'll say I like the 3-weekend format because it allows me to rest and recuperate in between shows.
There is that.
But it also doesn't quite have the momentum that the 11-day marathon does. But on the counterpoint of that is that whenever someone's like, oh, I love going on Tuesdays and Wednesdays when it's not that busy, and then I say, stop, Summerfest doesn't want to hear that. Like, Summerfest doesn't want to hear, oh, I love going when there's nobody down there, because that tells me they've something's wrong. I'm going to ask our guest, but not name him, because I think that's very fun. What is your stance, 3 weekends or the 11-day marathon?
Well, I'm kind of stuck in the middle. As an operator with 2 locations, I won't reveal who I am, 2 locations right outside the gates, I prefer the 3-day format, and really it's selfishly for my staff, because prior to that, our staff would be going 12 days straight and get no break for working. And I think a lot of that goes to be said, too, for staff at Summerfest. Like, you need a break or you get burnt out. So as a consumer, I love it going 12 days or 11 days or whatever it is. But as a operator who also keeps in mind their employees and their stress levels, I like the 3 days because it gives them 4 days to recuperate the two.
And the same goes for media. I mean, it is always an exhausting 10 or 11 day streak. I just sort of feel like, I don't know. I'm trying to determine if I want to be exhausted, you know, 3 weekends in a row.
Yeah.
I think the only thing missing is really adding the Sunday back in for the families. I think that's the one thing that's really missing. I think a lot of families would go during the week.
Maybe you don't do like 10 o'clock headliners on those Sundays. You do like 7 o'clock headliners, which I think is what Lollapalooza does on their Sunday. But I could be wrong on that. If you're wondering who this man is with the great Summerfest takes and who is an operator of 2 places near the Summerfest gates.
And more places,
Well, conveniently, that's Paul Hackbarth. Lori, would you like to give him the proper introduction?
No, this is Paul Hackbarth of Hackbarth Hospitality, and we brought him on because he's got some pretty exciting news. I think we announced last summer that they were establishing a camp bar at State Fair.
For those who don't know, Hackbarth Hospitality is kind of the camp geniuses.
The owners of Camp Bar. Actually, Paul, you can recite all of your spaces better than I can, because but it's Camp Bars. You have 3 locations
So the portfolio began with the Camp Bars. We have Shorewood, Wauwatosa, Third Ward, Deer Camp down by the Pfizer Forum, recently Saloon in the Third Ward, which is right next door to Camp Bar. And then we own and operate also 3 event venues as well. The Atrium in Shorewood, Vista downtown, and Birch in Wauwatosa. Those are the 8 locations. And now add in number 9, which is the State Fair.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. A little tease. Yay. Yeah. We're going to talk more about that.
And this is crazy because I remember talking to you years ago and you're like, no, we're not doing it anymore.
It makes so much sense. Everything about camp makes so much sense. And it's one of those things where it's like, how were there not these kind of places before you guys? Like, how come no one else got on top? Like, of course, there should be kind of Northwoods cabin, you know, very Scotty-centric places, bars in Milwaukee. And you guys were kind of the first ones to be like, you're right, there should be something, and we're going to own that. And you guys have so far.
Yeah.
No, thank you for that. I think we, you know, we weren't the first people to ever do a Northwoods bar, because Northwoods bars have existed forever up north.
In the Northwoods.
but bringing that full immersive experience to the city and taking it to a different level, I feel that's where we really excelled. And I can't tell you when we opened how many people said, like, why didn't I think of that? I mean, how the heck did no one else do that? And I know there's some, you know, there were some bars that had taxidermy and things like that, but I feel like we really took the entire experience and really brought it to life, and it's been a really fun, wild ride.
You owned it. Wasn't just like a casual thing. It was like, this is going to be our thing. And I mean, you've broadened that out too. I mean, you are speaking to us from Saloon right now, correct? Which is kind of more of a like Texas Northwoods,
the Wild West,
a little bit. Yeah.
Yes. Swap out the moose with the bison, and you got a saloon. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally true. Well, and I think, you know, people ask like, "Oh, how did you think of this?" I feel like that was really a matter of like people not saying things. Like, things are so close to you that you don't even think about them, you know, almost. Like,
yeah, right.
Everybody's got this connection somehow, or at least folks who are, who grew up in Wisconsin, for sure, have a connection to something in the up north area,
right.
You know, right. Whether it's just nostalgic. The stories or if they actually, you know, kind of spent time there. So talk to us, like, how did you come up with that idea? Because, like, you weren't a bar owner. You weren't, I mean, you ran Sound by Design. Yeah. Like, I mean,
yeah, so
you're
that,
a DJ.
Yes. How did a DJ end up doing a bar? And that's the one piece of the hospitality group we didn't talk about. It really started with Sound by Design, which I started before I could drive. My mom was taking me to weddings and events. Literally, we hooked a trailer up to her Suburban. She would secretly drop me off so no one knew I was too young to drive. And imagine someone that young doing your wedding. But that's really where it started, and it's now advanced to a full production company, 500-600 events a year. And I recently handed off the baton to my brother-in-law, Tori, so I am no longer involved with Sound by Design. Yeah. So that piece has been removed from the hospitality group, but it's forever in my heart.
Because you have a few other things going on.
Yeah, I got a lot of other things going. And
the number is not shrinking.
He definitely earned that, and it's exciting to watch that piece of the puzzle grow. But it really all started, I was driving to a grocery store in Shorewood. I was really in need for a new building for Sound by Design because we were getting to the level where we needed an office space. And I purchased a building on Oakland Avenue, which houses Camp Shorewood now. But that building had two storefronts at the time. The first storefront we renovated into an office space for Sound by Design. And then we had a vacant, the other space was vacant. And I was getting frustrated with it being vacant. So I went down to the Village and really picked their mind on, you know, what could we do with the space? How could we fill it? What would be a good idea? And they really started asking me the questions of, well, you've been operating and you live here now. What do you think's missing? And I said, well, I have 30 to 40 21-year-old employees and older coming back on a Friday, Saturday night, and we don't really have much to do on this end of Shorewood. At that time, there was really just the Village Pub, and I think Three Lions had just opened. But really on the south side of Shorewood, there wasn't much going on. So I said, in all honesty, we could really use a bar. A bar like a Walski's is what I said. Beer, cocktails, popcorn. Simple. And
they were like, you cracked it.
Exactly. The development planner at the time, Erica, was like, I think that's genius. That's a great idea. That's exactly what we need. We need some more nightlife. We need to draw more people out and show them all Shorewood has to offer. So long story short, you know, I was on board with finding someone to basically do a bar. But I mean, knowing me and my entrepreneurial spirit, I'm like, well, why not be me? So coincidentally, this is a long story, I'm sorry, but coincidentally, that same week, my wife and I had closed on our dream cabin up north, somewhere we went going up north our entire life. But it really was the experience that that I always tried to encourage everyone to, like, you got to come to our cabin. You got to see what it's like. It's different than anything else. But anyways, we were driving up north, and I dropped it on my wife, and I said, hey, what do you think about doing a bar next to our office? And she's like, heck no, not doing it. No way. Everyone fails in bars. You know, what everybody tells you, including my accountant. It's always, you know, what everyone says talks you out of it. But, you know, we had 4 to 5 hours to talk. And I think by the time we got about 45 minutes out, I had told my wife, I said, well, it'll get the 35 guys out of our house every single Friday and Saturday night after like 4 a.m. She's like, sold, let's look into it. And, you know, coincidentally, we went into our brand new cabin. I lit a fire. I grabbed an ice cold Coors Light out of the fridge. And I looked up at the moose above the fireplace and I was like, I got it. And she's like, what? I said, let's make a bar that resembles what up north means to us. And the next morning, our architect, Wade, who actually has the cabin next door, he kind of was the visionary behind the compound. I called him up. I was really excited. I said, hey, can you make a bar that looks like our cabins? And that's really kind of where it went. And that's where the brand began. So it was more of a, let's make something that looks like this. But when we opened the first bar, I didn't even know how to bartend. I knew how to pour a beer, but I understood people and a business and an atmosphere. And really, that's the long story short. And from there, it went to Tulsa and snowballed and then, from there.
And then Third Ward. but camp is about, like, obviously it starts with the atmosphere. It starts with how it looks, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you have, you know, taxidermied animals and fireplaces and cozy, like, rustic furniture. And, like, it just, it gives you this whole setup that you walk in and you have gone from someplace in the city of Milwaukee, you know, a busy street, to a place that's not Milwaukee at all.
Right, right.
I like that it lands just on the right side of, like, Northwoods kitsch, where, like, there'd be a way to make it look like a New York bar and to make it look like a place that no one has ever been up north before. And it's all, like, you know, it just doesn't have the soul of it. And you guys balance that line really well, where it's like, everything in there is so Northwoods, but without being over the top and being, like, you know, gaudy and being like, oh, this is just an act. This is drag. This isn't someone who's really gone up north. I really like how you guys kind of, it feels up north without, you know, going too far.
But part of that is, like, how it feels too, which is more than just how it looks, right? And you guys have been pretty, and I don't know how much of this was in your head, you know, to begin with, but there's the whole hospitality component. Like, this is a really relaxed bar, you know, it's family friendly. I don't know. I mean, I think there's some magic there that I don't even know how to describe, which makes you feel outside of your space.
Yeah, I feel, you know, to hit on a couple of those points, you know, everything that is on the walls in the bar, we've hand collected. You know, these aren't things that were given to us, weren't just massive collections we found online. Like, I literally went to flea markets and met people, and, you know, you see the snowmobile signs. I didn't steal those. I donated to the clubs. They gave me the old stuff they didn't want. You know, the distressing.
That's pretty authentic when you go stealing those.
Yeah, but I didn't. Yeah. I didn't. We donate to the clubs, and, you know, we get involved, and it's just the whole experience of collecting and, you know, working with really great designers to bring in those fabrics and lighting components. And, you know, from my previous life of being a DJ and a lighting person, you know, bringing the ambiance, you know, that's the one thing, like, I will try out 4 different light bulbs before I find the right color tone. And that's just who I am, but I really feel bringing that experience. But also what makes you great is the people you have working for you. And I feel we do a really great job of investing in our people, finding great management, but really getting people to fall in love with that theme. And I feel like, you know, Laura, you said when you go into a camp, you see everybody. I love going into camp on a weekend and seeing grandma, grandpa, all the way down to the kids playing in the game room. And that's what up north is. If you go up north, it's everyone goes to a resort. They go out to a bar. Mom and dad are having an old fashioned. Grandma and grandpa are, you know, doing their thing. And the kids are, they're just giving them dollars to go away to the game room, you know. And I feel like we really captured that. And it just allows people a staycation in the middle of Milwaukee.
Did that happen naturally? Because honestly, you could have created Camp Bar, and it could have been a frat bar. I mean, like, ostensibly, is like you could have had a themed bar that attracted, you know, a young demographic, you know, and only that. And,
or followed the trend of the time, whatever that may have been.
And that's not exactly what happened. So was this kind of a natural thing? Did you have to promote it so that people knew, like, oh, anybody can come here? How did that happen?
Well, I feel like out of the gate, we didn't have an identity crisis, but people had an identity crisis with us in the fact of, I remember the original, I don't even remember if they were a Facebook article. It was 10 years ago. I don't remember. But I think it was a Facebook article. And I remember saving the clippings from it or screenshots. And people were like, is this guy nuts? A Northwoods bar in the middle of the city, like taxidermy in Shorewood? Like, what is he thinking? You know, but it was very discouraging at the beginning. But I feel like once people came in, like, just that nostalgia of memories and up north and family, I think that just took over. And I'll be honest, like the first couple months, I remember like 10, 11 o'clock at night, I would go into DJ mode and start like bringing up the music and doing the lighting, and it didn't work. People left. I'm like, okay, that's not what camp is. People want a really great atmosphere. They want it laid back. They want somewhere fun to come watch sports. But that was another thing too, you know, not to sidetrack, but the sports was a big part of it too. You know, I mean, having that component, being able to bring the whole family out on a Packer Sunday, that was really, I think, a thing we captured well. And we started the street parties with the big screen. So it's really kind of evolved. But yeah, I think it's just the overall nostalgia of when you go up north, the first thing you do is generally crack open a beer or make an old fashioned. So we just kind of went with it and kept it simple.
Were you nervous to make create the second one in Tosa? Like, though you knew you had people coming from all parts of the city, like, was it sort of this hesitate? I don't know. Were you hesitant at all? Like, maybe we can't do this again. Like,
yeah, I think it's a two feeling, right? I was very flattered that Wauwatosa came to me and wanted a camp bar. You know, Joel, the alderman, who's still the alderman now, his claim to fame is bringing camp to Tosa. But we all know Joel. But, you know, that was, to me, very flattering. I remember the Shorewood bid director introducing me to Joel and saying, these guys want a camp bar. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then the same thing happened in the third ward. But I'm also very careful moving forward to not overdo it, you know, which is why you're seeing things like Saloon and the venues. And I also don't want to overdo it where camp is oversaturated, if that makes sense.
Undiluted.
Yeah, there is a point where you need to stop before it becomes a franchise, if you will. Yeah. So I like that they're all neighborhood bars right now.
Yeah. But I was going to say, and they're all a little bit different. I mean, they capture the same sort of spirit and there's the same sort of vibe. But every neighborhood, I think you walk into Tosa and it's a little different than Shorewood. You know, just because the people who live there are a little bit different. You know, Third Ward is very Third Wardy. You know, it's like Third Ward up north. I don't know. I don't even know how to describe that, but that's, you know, definitely. Because you could do a tour and there's going to be like this unifying factor that is Camp Bar. And then there's going to be like, it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit different everywhere. Which I do think helps, you know. You know,
one thing that I
feel
really,
like their spot was duplicated, right?
Right. And I think one thing I'm really proud of is, you know, when you have regulars at each bar, they say, I've never been to any of the other camp bars. And they're proud of that. But they want to see it. They're curious. But they've made camp their bar. And that's how I know we've done it right. And we haven't grown too fast, because camp is still a neighborhood bar. It's not just a brand. And that's what I always want it to be. And that's why I'm very cautious in where we move next. And that's kind of why we're pivoting into different areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Like State Fair.
What a trend.
What an area. What an area to pivot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did that come to be? Was that a you guys being like, hey, State Fair, you know what would look great there? Or was it State Fair being like, you know what would look great here? Or was it a tandem? Or
And I think you got to tell people how long you've wanted this.
Yes. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Well, once Third War, or once Deer Camp was completed, you know, at that point we were looking for new opportunities of what we could do with the brand. And like I mentioned before, not to piggyback off it, but I didn't necessarily want to keep opening camp bars everywhere. But it was my goal now to bring the experience to the people. Like when I go to festivals or I go to the fair, I'm like, man, I really wish our brand was here. I think it'd be great for our consumers who love camp, but it'd also be a great entryway for people who have never been introduced to camp before. So they understand what that logo is and what it means and that it's actually an immersive experience. So anyways, I had identified that that was something I wanted to do. And I just kind of started talking with people. And a friend of mine, Brad, who was one of my general managers for a long time, also knew Maria Rapina very well. And she had been talking about, you know, the possibility of, you know, they're at 47 years, 48 years, you know, maybe by year 50, you know, handing the torch off to somebody else or selling it. But it was really important for her to find the right person. Because at the fair, there are a couple of ways that you can become a vendor. But the easiest way or best way is to have somebody bring you in through their booth. That's what the fair likes.
And that's not easy. Because people don't want to get rid of that. I mean, people are in these booths for 40, 50, 60 years. You know, like, there's a really big... So it's almost like you have to either watch and wait until, like,
they're
people
like
get tired of it.
Season tickets.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's totally
even harder
like that.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, Brad's like, you should really talk with Maria. So I sat down with Maria, you know, we talked a little bit. She was very familiar with the camp brand and what it was all about, but for her, it was really handing it off to the right person. And I think she loved the fact that I had little kids and they just like her kids, they're going to grow up with the fair. They're going to work at the fair. It just brings that whole family thing. But really, I think she could, by visiting all of our locations, know that I was going to take care of it and give it the love it needed, you know? And we actually started talking right before the COVID shutdown. And I'll never forget, we were on one of the last flights out of Mexico home when all the airlines started shutting down and, you know, things like that. And we were supposed to have the meeting that week. And I said, Maria, I can't do it. I said, I got a bad feeling. I don't think the bars are going to be open for a little bit here. Let's put this on hold. And, you know, lo and behold, that year the fair got canceled. But after the following year, she's like, okay, I'm ready to start talking again. And we basically brought the conversation right back where it was. And at that point, we went through the full fair board vetting process and they were happy to have us. So that's really the story. It just was, Maria was looking for the right person. I had someone in the middle who worked for me, who worked for her. And it was the perfect little marriage of two companies. So
Wow. And there's obvious business reasons to want to go to State Fair, right? Like, I mean, it's 10 days of amazing crowds and
It's the whole state. It's an entire state's worth of people coming in saying hi.
Exactly.
Learning about the brand.
But you also like have a connection that goes way back. Like, I mean, you have memories. I want to hear about Little Paul at State Fair.
Little Paul at the fair. Well, yeah, we, you know, every year grew up as a family going to the fair. You know, it was an annual thing with grandparents and family. And actually, you know, beyond that, our family has an advertising background. And my grandfather and uncle did all the advertising for the fair for many, many years. So you're actually going to see at our fair booth, not to go too far into decor right away, but you're going to see some of that vintage advertising that my aunt helped me find in some of the old, I guess, warehouses that my grandfather and uncle had full of old ad work and stuff like that. So like 1973 fair advertising with more dad jokes than I can even imagine.
Well, and to be clear, your family is pretty famous in the advertising world. I guess
you could say that. Yes, we come from an advertising family, the Eisner family. So if anyone's familiar with the William F. Eisner Advertising Museum that was in the Third Ward, that was my grandmother made that in memory of my grandfather. My uncle took over that business and ran it for many years until he passed. So we have a lot of advertising and marketing blood in our family. So, but it all comes down to the fair, which is pretty cool. It's almost like that, not final chapter, but one of the final chapters where the whole thing comes together.
So your family was kind of invested in the fair in a very different way. I mean, they were promoting it, like supporting it, And so you going every year, you know, well, you probably totally didn't make that connection. What was your, as a kid, you know, to like the advertising and the stuff, you know, it was there nonetheless. And what was your favorite part of the fair when you were?
Oh, man. Well, there's many years of being a kid, you know, many phases, but I'd say that, you know, the common thing would be always the corn and the slide. I think those are two of my favorite things.
The slide is essential. It is so
whoever
key.
Whoever thought of that was a genius. But yeah, the slide, the corn, and just, you know, the animals. And there was actually back in the time my sister used to show horses, and that was a part of the fair. And there was just so many different fair memories. Really, I guess there's different parts of your life. You know, I think during high school it was the Midway or whatever they called it at the time, the game area. But now it's kind of back to the old stroll around, start with corn, go and get a pork chop sandwich, you know, the traditional mm-hmm. things. And now I get to go down the slide with my kids, which is a lot of fun. So,
And soon they're gonna be working. Did they get rid of the burlap? Is it no longer the burlap sacks? Because I remember that was like a key part of the memory was getting prickled on the legs and back on
they had them last year. Had them last year for sure.
I was going to say, I think that stayed. I think that's pretty much the tradition is you have to put up with the burlap stinging your little legs while you know. Well, you go down the slide, but it's so fun. I don't think you really, you know, or horrifying if you're scared of heights too. I mean, I would imagine. So what can people, how does camp, I mean, State Fair is Wisconsin, right? And there's so many things about it that I think capture, what Wisconsin is all about. And I think maybe unlike, or maybe more so even, because Wisconsin is such an agriculturally driven state, that the State Fair, you know, makes absolute sense, you know, in comparison to, I don't know, other state fairs are different and differently orchestrated as well. But how does camp fit in with that? And what kind of an experience are you creating with former Rupina's booth?
Well, that is a loaded question. but, you know, I guess to kind of rewind a little bit, when we looked at the three major experiences we thought about camp would be a good fit for, you know, fair was definitely on top of that list. It was just getting to the top of that list. And luckily, through Brad and through Maria and through the process, it all worked out. But, you know, like you said, camp really resembles what northern Wisconsin is to a lot of us who grew up going up north. So I feel bringing that experience, which once again, outside the taxidermy booth that's at the fair, I don't feel like that experience exists, you know? So bringing that full immersive camp experience, I felt was really, really important. But on top of that, for me too, like I mentioned earlier, it was bringing the brand and, you know, having people understand what that brand really meant. But really, this is the biggest camp bar I've ever built. You know, we are just wrapping up our construction, and I think a lot of people out there are absolutely flabbergasted how much I've actually invested into this project, but it wouldn't be a camp if I just painted the walls brown and red. You know, we went all out. We wrapped the walls with tongue and groove and red log, and I have a taxidermy collection in two trailers, you know, ready to go up. So we didn't change who we are. You know, we really kept it what it is. It's going to be family friendly. And it also was important to the fair of, you know, hey, this is a new thing for us. We're approving something that's known as a bar. But they also were happy that we're a very family friendly experience that really captured the whole family. So I know we'll move into the food component because everyone's like, what is camp going to do for food? Because Rupina's was such a staple for so long. But that really will capture the agricultural part of your question. So we can move there next if you want.
Yeah, it seems like we've naturally segued.
Yeah. We should, because I think we've given people, you know, effectively at least a sense of what to expect. I mean, the folks from the Northwoods can come down and hopefully feel at home, you know. And everybody can kind of experience.
Oh no!
You can take that out, Gabe. Me dying here.
Yeah. Gabe edits.
Water break.
I think it's cool because I think I've always thought the state fair should capture a little bit more of Wisconsin culture. I mean, I think there's a lot there, you know. But I always thought, gosh, like, wouldn't this be cool if you just literally could walk through this and you'd get, you know, the agricultural component and just, but all of the things, you know, that make Wisconsin cool. And it could be, I don't know, I feel like that would be a huge boon for tourism, you know, just give people, you know, 10 days or 14, however long the fair is, you know, worth of just all Wisconsin. And so I think it's cool that this one element is being like done. And I don't think it would be as cool if you didn't do it as genuinely as you do. So that said, yeah, how does agriculture fit into this plan for food here?
Yes. Well, if anyone who knows camp previously knows that when you go to camp, it's a bar that has food, but we're not known for food. So we love to partner with local producers, local bakeries to provide, you know, our pizzas, and we cook them fresh in house. So we do have that food component, but we're not known for that. And when we first took on the fair, you know, the big question was, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with food? Like, that's not my forte. Camp's not known for that. I also don't like to reinvent who we are as a brand, because I think that's doing us a disservice. So when we started thinking of how do you reinvent another tater tot, or how do you reinvent another fish fry, or how do you reinvent something else to put on fries or something else deep fried on a stick, it just all got confusing. But I got to give you some props. I leaned on some old articles of what's missing at the fair, or items that were missing at the fair. Nice. So the idea really, I think, came from On Milwaukee, just from doing my research. And believe it or not, at the State of Wisconsin State Fair, there is no frozen custard. I saw that. What? I grabbed it.
Yeah. No, there's not. And this is among the things where I'm like, how? How do we
My
have
God,
no frozen custard?
Smacked.
Even
this
when they
ridiculous.
Did ice cream, like shakes last year, it was ice cream. I was like, no, you know. So anyway.
Yeah. So thanks to your articles and other periodicals I was reading, like, that was a big missing piece. And I couldn't believe no one jumped on it. And maybe I'll learn why this year. I don't know, but hopefully not. But we're going to do custard, and we're going to do it simple, and we're going to do it well. And that is something that I think you keep it simple. There's enough food options at the fair that you can do something different. You know, there's plenty of booths that do just one thing. Like, let's say just cheese curds, for example. Like, they do them and they do them well. So there's no reason we can't do that. I mean, we're talking, what, 80, 90 degrees?
Yeah.
Lots of kids, lots of families. I mean, there's no reason custard won't sell. So keeping it very simple with just, you know, dish, cones, and simple sundaes. So,
oh, lo and behold, I did just find the article on Milwaukee.com. Why doesn't Summerfest or State Fair sell custard?
Tell me why.
I'm taking a look at it right now. Apparently, apparently, according to this article from Molly Snyder, great job, Molly, the equipment that is needed to make custard versus ice cream may be part of the issue. To properly make custard, one needs a proper custard machine, which is not the same as a soft serve. They work differently and they create different consistencies. Custard machines are very expensive, which is why some custard stands choose to route custard mix through a soft serve machine. That might be a little snootier of a reason.
It is interesting because Summerfest, and not to segue here, but I do want to clarify that Summerfest has actually had custard, and custard came back this year. Culver's had a booth at Summerfest in the early 2000s for a number of years, and then Cedar Crest came this year with custard, but they sold it by the pint. So it was all prepackaged. So you did sort of...
Another quote in that piece is, to serve ice cream, you need a freezer, a sink, a couple of scoops, and a cash register. Mm-hmm. This is Kurt Fogel at Dairyland. Mm-hmm. Pretty easy and cheap to do. In order to serve frozen custard appropriately, you would need all that plus enough batch freezers to keep up with demand. That's a lot of money, electricity, workforce. So it makes sense. And it also might be one of those things that's like, as much as it makes sense in the summer to have frozen custard, like, is it logistically something people find easy to eat, you know, during, when you're, you know, strolling around the state fairgrounds? But there hasn't been enough regular custard at these events to really kind of know that. And I think...
Well, and ice cream has had a presence. And from a logistics of eating, ice cream and custard are similar that way.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you for breaking down that ice cream melt, and custard.
They do melt at different rates. Well, and technically, well, and I should say that because custard is ice cream. Like, custard is ice cream, but ice cream isn't custard.
I believe the technical difference is the milk fat percentage, I believe, in my custard education of very short timing. I think that's what it is.
An egg.
But yeah, it is the machines. It's hard to get the machines. And I didn't want to use, you know, there's a lot of times you'll go to a sporting event or something and they say they have custard, quote unquote custard, and it comes out of what you normally see a soft serve come out of.
Right.
Even though they're using custard mix, it doesn't feel right. But the machine that... we found, which that's a whole nother story, is your traditional custard machine where it comes out in ribbons like you would be at any other major custard stand. Yeah. So,
and you need
we'll
that
see how
because
it goes.
It
I'll report back.
The texture. I'm excited. We'll
do a podcast after the state fair too, and we'll see if you're like never again custard is banned.
Well, the machines are high maintenance, and you have to have a full time person watching the consistency and constantly. Mm-hmm. Like when we're hiring for these events. You know, we have the bar side and then we have the custard crew. You know, like it is a crew and it's going to be a team. And we'll see. It's year one, but we're also going to offer, you know, simple snacks, peanuts. We're going to have our famous camp popcorn. Unfortunately, we can't give it away because it's the fair. We have to sell it. But we will have a monster popcorn machine. So you'll be able to get your favorite camp bar popcorn. So really on one side of our booth, you know, it's going to be look like an old-fashioned custard stand. On the other side, it's going to be a ginormous camp bar with two entertainment stages, and maybe that's our next segue. But, there will
great.
Be other opportunities, too.
You are naturally
it's like I used to DJ or something.
I was going to say, and your family is involved in advertising, because you were just seamlessly hitting these marks on this conversation. Yeah. But, let's talk about... So it sounds like there will be entertainment aspects to the camp experience at State Fair?
Yes. We have two stages, which is really exciting. If you're familiar with what Rapinos did in the past, they had the famous Bobby Way on the outdoor stage. You could find him in various acts out there. But we also... You know, instead of doing a huge dining room inside, you know, we're going to have pub tables. It'll feel more like a bar. We actually have the largest bar I've ever built. It's 120 feet of live edge bar top that was not easy to find this during these times. But we do have the 120 foot live edge bar top that you would see in any camp bar.
Is it one piece?
No, they're all 12 foot sections, but they're seamed together.
Okay.
So,
no,
it looks like it though. It looks like it. So. That'd be a tall tree. That'd be a big tree.
It would be
a sequoia. Yeah.
Imagine that coming down the freeway. But so then, you know, in the main building, which is great, it has, I think, six or seven huge overhead doors. So the whole space opens up. Then we'll have the larger stage, which will house the larger bands at night. So you could equate the size of the bands and the power of the bands to some of the bigger stages that are at the fair now that Rapinos just didn't do in the past. I think they focus more on the day crowd, where we'll have, you know, the famous Milwaukee artist like a Joe Ray that plays every day during the day, plays the popular cover hits. But then at night, there'll be more specific bands like a Five Card Stud or a Playlist or other local larger bands to bring that experience at night. So full production, full lighting. So that'll bring a whole new level of excitement to that corner.
Will you have Bobby Friss? This is what I need to know.
No, I don't.
Will it be Frissmas at Camp Bar?
Not this year. Not this year.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm sure Bobby's... those state fair staples, you do love them. You do. And like you were talking about, a lot of the ones you guys are going to have, it's going to be fun. I love... It's just a different
vibe. It's a
little
local music festival right there at Camp Bar State Fair. So my question goes back to this custard. So, like, is it like scoops and cones? Or are we talking like rip your floats and stuff?
Well, year one, we got to keep it simple. We can't go too crazy. We got to, you know, everyone's like, are you going to do a favor of the day? Are you going to do this? I think we have a lot of really, really great ideas, but year one, we got to kind of grow into it. But, you know, we have the option of obviously ice cream in a dip, not ice cream, sorry, custard in a dish, custard in a cone. And then we have four signature sundaes. Sundaes are...
Oh, that's pretty ambitious, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not just cones.
They have like the... Yeah. They're all kind of... I guess they're not all Northwoods-based, but you have like a s'more sundae, right? So it kind of brings that Northwoods nostalgia to it.
My
favorite sundae, which is like a dusty road.
I know where Bobby Tanzillo is going to be having the steak there. Sorry, the dogs are having a fight behind me. They heard food and now they're jacked up.
Your traditional turtle sundae and then like a classic sundae that you can pick either hot fudge or caramel. But that's it. Keep it simple. And, you know, next year if we decide to do a favor of the day, I do have a Sporky's idea for next year that I'm not going to tell you.
But, tell us that, like the field in which it is in?
It has to do with custard. How's that?
That'll work. I can work with that. I'm going to think for 365 really days what it could be.
There's never been a Sporky's submission.
But here's custard, a fun fact. You can't join Sporky's your first year. You have to have 1 year in at the fair before you can join it. Yeah. So
that makes sense.
That's why we're not in it this year.
It kind of makes sense that you have to have a year under your belt unless you come up with like a hideous Sporky and they're like, what have we done? Like, you got to prove yourself a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Right.
So, well, that's cool. That's definitely something for folks to look forward to. Because I think, you know, if there's something beyond like animals and hanging out and, you know, I don't know, all of that, it's definitely, you know, fair food. And the Sporky's have sort of, I think, kept vendors creative a little bit.
Well, and I do think you're right, that idea of like the Wisconsin State Fair should be more Wisconsin-y. Like, it should feel a little bit more particular to Wisconsin. I think having a brand like Camp, which is very Wisconsin culture, and having custard. And, you know, it adds a little bit more of that Wisconsin texture beyond, you know, barns and blue buildings. And, you know, I think I'm going to the Minnesota State Fair this year for the first time.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's supposed to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, my fiance tells me every summer that it's like, listen, there's only one state fair in the United States, and it's the Minnesota State Fair. Yeah. So humble braggy about it. And I'm very interested to see what they do and what kind of things. Because it does seem like the Minnesota State Fair, I mean, putting aside like size and stuff like that, it does seem like a little bit more of the texture of Minnesota is at that
and
fair.
And yet it's really interesting because, and I think I've said this, maybe not publicly, but so look for the, there's a Liney Lodge at the Minnesota State Fair. Don't ask me why Lining Kugels is in Minnesota, but it is so much cooler than the one in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I want to know why we don't have the cool Liney Lodge that Minnesota has. And now I realize they might have to sell themselves a little bit more in Minnesota. So that's like
the
conclusion I drew.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of like, I think we should get a better Liney Lodge.
Yeah, because wasn't like the Bud Light stage the biggest stage at State Fair besides like the main stage? But like, isn't there like a really big Bud Light stage? And it's like, well, of course Bud Light would take that because Budweiser needs to work harder in Wisconsin to get its name out there and to get branding out there as opposed to Miller, which is like, hi, we're everywhere. You know us. We don't need to sell.
But anyway, I mean, definitely. I mean, I think we could talk about the interesting things about state fairs all day long.
The logistics. What is your favorite? Yeah. What is your favorite part of the state fair, Paul? Like, just off topic.
As an adult. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now it's going to be working, unfortunately.
But, I was going to say, you can't say camp bar. You can't say
all
the
that's
camp
gone
bar
out the window. I think my favorite thing now will people enjoy camp at the fair, you know, and really fitting in. But I would say leading up to not being open, has been just working with the fair board and working with the current vendors. Everyone is so nice, so helpful. If you need to bounce off ideas of everything from staffing ideas to pricing to, you know, our vendor director, Lisa, she's just incredible. I mean, anytime you have a question, they're right there. You know, I didn't get that feel from other places we looked at. It was more of like you're just a number. I felt like here at State Fair, like they genuinely make you feel like you're wanted, and they make you feel like they'll do anything to help you, and they're there to help you succeed. And all the other, like all of our neighbors have, whenever I'm there, they run over and, you know, if just, you know, if you need extra change during the fair or something goes wrong or your CO2 tank goes, or we're all here for each other, you know?
And you're like, don't make me think of all the issues we could possibly have. Yeah.
Well, I've tried to eliminate a lot of that, but yeah. You know, it's just that the camaraderie that we've already experienced without being open is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say that's my favorite experience so far. You know, maybe we can reconnect after and I can tell you what went well and what didn't go well. Or...
Well, and it probably before that, like, I don't know, the corn, was the corn an endearing part of your State Fair experience? Did that kind of extend from your childhood into adulthood?
Yeah, always. Still is. So, still is nice. A big part of it. And I'm excited for what that space can bring. And here you go with another segue for you. But, you know, we're thinking bigger than the fair. You know, that building we've put a lot of investment into. I think it's the third or second or fourth, somewhere in there, largest footprint at the fair. So when you talk Bud Pavilion size, you talk other pavilions, we're right up there with it. It's just we're finally utilizing that space. So I'm really hopeful to use this space, you know, 3 months of the year for corporate events, fundraisers, even weddings. I mean, it's such a cool space. It's got big soaring ceilings with triple tier antler chandeliers. It's just a really cool experience. I think we can do a lot of fun with raising money for organizations and even, like I said, even hosting weddings. I think would be super unique, and everyone's trying to do that next unique thing. So maybe for a while it was barns. Maybe now it's the fair. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah.
You never know.
And I think it's cool. And I think it's cool. A cool idea, because I'm not sure how much, you know, I mean, obviously the big halls and things are activated at State Fair, but you don't see much happening, you know, in the fair, smaller, that's what the fair loved spaces. About us.
The fair was really encouraged that I was looking beyond outside the box of just the fair and harvest fair, because, you know, most vendors, they'll make their money during those two fairs and they're happy. But for me, I'm always pushing. I'm always, you know, during harvest fair, there happens to be a Packer game at 3:30 on that Sunday. Well, guess who's bringing in a Jumbotron and doing a Packer party?
Smart. Like,
those are things that the fair wants to see, you know, so bringing those different level of excitement to the fair. Just thinking outside that box.
Well, this all sounds awesome. It just sounds like it's making the Wisconsin State Fair even better than it already was, which we already love the Wisconsin. I've grown, Molly wrote a piece about this, where it's like, when you're a little kid, you're a State Fair person. And then when you become a teenager, you're like, the State Fair's not cool. I want to go to Summerfest. That's where all the cool people are. And then you like grow up a little bit more and you're like, Summerfest is kind of loud and weird now. And I don't know any of the cool hip bands. I like going to the State Fair. It's the right energy for me. And now I've pretty firmly reached that point where I'm like, I like State Fair. Like, it's a good vibe.
I remember, well, I'll be really, really honest. I didn't go to the fair. I didn't go to the State Fair when I was a kid.
Not me neither, not my, much. We would only go for a pork chop sandwich and then bail.
I shouldn't say I was never there, but I don't have a lot of, like, it's not like we did it every year.
Yeah. It was the slide and the pork chop and the cream puff. And
so it's interesting because I found a bunch of people to go with me in high school. You know, so we, you know, and we'd go, and I mean, we just, I don't know, we'd go around the fair. I remember buying weird things, like, you know.
Yeah, that's the State Fair, all right.
That's what I did in high school. It was like probably stuff that didn't make any sense, you know, and I remember, you know, I'm running around and petting cool little animals and thinking it was sort of fun. And, you know, I mean, I don't know, you always went with like a boyfriend or something, so I don't know. I don't know. This State Fair is the most romantic place ever.
Well, I mean, ask that one couple that had sex on the bleachers in the
That wasn't me.
and with that seamless transition, Paul, where can people find, one more time, where can people find the new Camp Bar location at State Fair? And then where can people find you and keep up with you out in the real world or in the digital world for that matter, if people want updates?
Well, the easiest way, I guess we could start to say we're on the Grand Mall. So we're right on the main drag of State Fair. And the easiest way to say that is if you were to slide down the slide and get off the slide and walk about two buildings down, you'll find camp right there.
Sure. Perfect. And you're not far from the Puff Pavilion either.
No.
We're between the, known as prime
we're between
real
the
estate.
Slide and the Puff Pavilion, right on the main drag, if you will. Yeah. The main drag. So you know, beyond the fair, follow us on social media. All the hot items will be up there for you to follow. Instagram, Facebook, the whole thing. So just keep following us on social media. That's the best place to find us. Follow us on Milwaukee.
Yeah. I was going to say, you search Camp Bar. You'll figure out how to find them.
You'll figure it out.
You're not going to run out of articles to read.
No.
It's almost correct. As though you guys have been doing stuff.
Yeah. Correct. You'll see our totally big camp flags flying in the air, and you'll definitely know we're there. And just look for the big brown and red cabin that's in the middle of the fair.
And I think this is going to be a fascinating science experiment, because it's going to. I'm interested to ask the question: Does a state fair cream puff make a good soaker pad when you've had something to drink at state fair? You would think no, but that's a lot of dairy, so maybe it is helpful. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you get into the mythology of how much does food, like how food works to mitigate alcohol.
Science.
Yeah. Science.
Yeah.
Science.
Totally science.
Yeah. No. But, and we end really, the podcast with science.
Yes, with science. And the mystery of that, because I'm not going to claim to know all of those ins and outs.
Oh, no, me neither.
Nonetheless, thank you, Paul.
Mythical.
So much.
Yes.
Yes, no, thank you so much
for coming
thank
in.
Thank you. And I guess one thing that I leave you with is everyone keeps asking, can we get a Camp Bar old fashioned at the fair? The question is not yet. The fair is not quite ready to allow vendors to free pour. But we will have the canned old fashions from the distributor. So if you do get an old fashioned, it's not a camp old fashioned, it's a canned old fashioned, but we're working on it. Hopefully next year. Fair is almost there, but they're not there yet with the free pouring of alcohol.
Classic Paul tease.
We're working
crazy
on it. I'm working on it.
Because
but don't judge me this year.
I don't think I knew that. And I was just going to assume that you could get a Camp Bar old fashioned. So I didn't even ask.
No,
I was
everything
like,
that's
has the
most
to be
obvious
canned question ever. But
all the cocktails are canned.
Okay. Huh. That's so fascinating.
If you this doesn't taste like a Camp Bar old fashioned, that's because it doesn't.
Yeah.
But hopefully next year. Hopefully next year.
That's okay. You got to have something. You got to always have something.
That just gives you something
toward.
To build on for.
It does.
You know?
Yeah, I can keep just bugging the board every week. Like, when can I do old fashioned? When can I do old fashioned?
Yeah. Can I pour my own alcohol now? Thanks.
Yeah. Please, please. I only want bourbon and brandy. That's all I'm asking for. I don't need vodka. Sure. Just bourbon and brandy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we make a bourbon and brandy?
And maybe they would allow. And maybe they would allow you to batch, you know, because technically you could batch.
It's the control. It's the control of the pour, and they just don't want people being overserved, and they really want to keep it a family-friendly environment. And I respect that. That's great.
Yeah, that's fair.
So
nice pun.
Meanwhile, Matt's getting
I didn't even realize
getting attacked in a friendly way by his.
Getting a hug
pup.
From my dog. So it seems like a good place
cute.
To end the podcast.
It does.
Paul,
it does.
So, thank you so
Paul.
Much for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Come have a Sunday.
Yep.
Oh, I am.
Have a great time at the fair.
We will
going
see
to
you
massacre
at the state fair.
Some more
for sure.
Sunday at the state fair.
So
thanks for having me. We really appreciate it. Continue to follow us on social media, and we'll see you all at the fair park.
Yep. It's called a podcast. That was an awesome conversation, and I briefly turned Australian there for a moment. It was an awesome conversation, and I can't
an
wait.
An Aussie.
It was an Aussie conversation, yes.
No.
And I can't wait to try out that new camp at the state fairgrounds. I think anything the state fair can do to become a little sexier, a little a little bit more on trend, a little bit more modern, scony, I think is really awesome. Yeah.
No, and I think it's cool. Like I think it's cool to have things that are around for 50 plus years.
Yes.
And I think there will always be a place for like those legendary spots that are just like old school Wisconsin. But it's good to infuse some new energy, even to things like the state fair. every
it's like all things. You want the old staples, you want the standbys, but you also want to make sure the new generation is something too. You know, something that I, 50 years from now, will be able to say, you know, oh, I was always there and stuff like that.
Well,
you know?
And it's kind of cool because I can't say that in my lifetime there's been a ton where it's like, oh, that's a new thing at State Fair. And I'll be able to tell my kids, I remember when Camp Bar went in there. Probably not nice. My kids.
I mean, my dad and I have this debate about retiring Ryan Braun's number. And I'm just like, you haven't retired a single player from my generation, which, fun fact, my generation has provided the best Brewers baseball in the team's history. So, like, or, like, the most sustained quality of play. So, like, you should retire his number. But that's a debate for a different podcast.
It is. Because then I'll have to go back and be like, well, we had a really good streak when I was a kid and we went to the...
And you lost in the World Series, and then
we did
never
lose
returned.
In the World Series. But you know, I don't know. We had Raleigh Fingers for goodness.
You had a few good
Robin
years.
Jones.
We've had like a good decade now of Brewers baseball.
We
We've been very lucky.
That's true.
All we need now is to lose in the World Series, and we can get to that level.
I was gonna say, we just need to make it there.
Yeah.
So we can either win or lose. I would prefer that we win. That would top it off really well.
But you know what I love most of all is reading food porns at the end of every episode. That's right. It's time for everyone's favorite game.
And I think it can be your turn. So
I think it is my turn.
This is all about, I think, sweet things. So... You know.
Yeah, which is my favorite topic. I am a sweet tooth at heart.
And there's a cream puff buried in here, so I think
That's
state
fair
worthy.
The logistical. we are reading Bakery of Lies.
Yeah, which Judith sounds violent,
Judith Askew. Yeah, Bakery of Lies sounds like a bad Netflix original movie about a bakery where a murder takes place or something.
Sounds like
a Hallmark movie gone rogue.
And it's a little bit like that. So I don't know. You'll have to read it.
Tell
me what you think when you're done.
Yeah. This is Bakery of Lies by Judith Askew. My favorite is the cream puff lie. The kind inflated with hot air, expanded to make an heroic sized story. Another is the cannoli, a long lie, well packed with nutty details, lightly wrapped in flaky truth. A macaroon isn't a little white lie, but it's covered with self-serving coconut. The apple tart carries slices of sour gossip, only slightly sweetened with truth. Then there's the Napoleon, an Iago lie of pernicious intent, layer upon layer of dark deceit. This person seems to have a love-hate relationship with...
I think the thing is it's the juxtaposition between, like, I don't know, sweet, lovely things. And lies.
Yeah, like the idea of like the apple tart is only slightly sweetened with like, it's healthy-ish. Like all of these things are lies. All of these things are bad for you, but they're delicious.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there's layers here. It's the lies we tell ourselves.
There's layers here? Like it's a Napoleon?
Like a Napoleon. Yes.
You've done it again, Lori. You've done it again. And if people want to hear you do it again on the Food Crush podcast, where can people find you?
Well, you found the Food Crush podcast, but you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, where you will see more of the layers of the podcast. And how about you, Matt? Where can
you
find your bubbly
find my flaky delicious crust at onmilwaukee.com. You can also find me on Twitter at A Man About Film. You can find me at Facebook at my name. You can find me on Instagram at A Man About Film as well. But you can't really find me there. It's just really an echo of me. That is truly a lie. My presence on Instagram is very much a lie.
It is the apple tart.
It is the Napoleon. It
mostly
is a deep,
sour,
dark deceit.
Just a few sweet little photos of your dog. And
hey, he's been a good boy. He's roaming around the room right now. not being a problem. So that's nice.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. So, he's not going to the bathroom outside. He doesn't like going outside right now, which is very problematic. Every time I try to make him go outside, he's like, don't want to do it. Like, there was that thunderstorm the other night, and I think it scared him out of the outside. And I'm just like, Charlie, you got to go. You have to go to the thunder place.
You got to fix that.
I know.
No more thunder.
We'll work on that. But in the meantime, you should just listen more to the Food Crush podcast, which thank you to my co-host. Thank you to Paul. Thank you to producer Gabe. Yeah. And thank you to you all who listen. And, you know, as always, keep cooking.